This is number five. The hardest aspect of accountability is not accepting that it's right or good. The hardest aspect of accountability is the acceptance by the will of a person. Accountability is good, yes, but it is not good for me. The reason it is not viewed as good for me is because I won't be able to slide by anymore. I'll have to really think and work hard at doing what's right. I won't be able to play an outward game anymore without dealing with the internal aspects of myself. Accountability is definitely difficult. But you see, it keeps you true. It sharpens you. And it makes you a better individual for the kingdom of God. And the hardest part is accepting that through the will of man. It is a volitional thing, something that your mind and your will must decide to do. And I believe that that is one of the hardest aspects of accountability. But becoming better people for the kingdom of God is really what we want to do and what we want to be. Jesus never promised that it would be a piece of cake or that it would be an easy road. But you know, nothing truly worthwhile is. So accountability is difficult in our culture, but it is absolutely healthy, and it is definitely worth pursuing. The 12 disciples were accountable to Jesus. Jesus himself was accountable to the Father. Paul and Silas were accountable to the church at Antioch. Timothy was accountable to Paul. Onesimus, a slave, was accountable to his master. When David committed adultery with Bathsheba and murdered Uriah, her husband, Nathan the prophet stood before the king and held him accountable. Joseph was accountable to Potiphar. Saul was accountable to Samuel. Accountability is a biblical concept that is good for us. It really is. A mentoring relationship provides a conducive environment for accountability to blossom. Mentors calling their mentorees into account is really an act of love and concern. A trusted mentor can ask the hard questions and call mentorees into account much more easily than others because of their relationship. Seasoned mentors don't pry for unnecessary details to gather juicy gossip to share. They're not interested in that. Their persistence in a matter is solely for the mentoree's good and for the glory of God. Confidentiality is of the utmost importance in the relationship. If a mentor desires accountability, he or she must model accountability too. A successful mentor is someone who quickly responds to reproof. He or she is not sitting in an untouchable ivory tower, but is open and is accessible and always seeking truth in order to become a better individual. With the various incidents that may arise, godly wisdom from above is needed to provide appropriate accountability for the mentoree. At times, the situation demands only an objective opinion while at other times a very straightforward talk is necessary. Just being a sounding board can factor into accountability, and other times a strong reproof is justified. Just how and when each is appropriate is a matter of the mentor's prayer, wisdom, and experience. In the churches I serve, we used a lay leadership program for developing leaders that demanded extensive work, a lot of memorization, small group meetings, and a midterm test and a final test after the program was completed. In order to promote accountability, I told every new class that people tend to do what we inspect, not what we expect. Therefore, we inspected a great deal of their work to keep everyone accountable. And you know what? It worked. People do better when they are accountable for what they do. There are several individuals in my life with whom I am accountable. I have given them permission to say anything to me, ask me anything, call me on the carpet when it's necessary, and basically oversee my life for betterment. I often go to these people and share an incident with them and say, what do you think? Am I thinking right on this matter? Was my behavior in line with biblical precepts? And when a positive response is given, I feel encouraged and strengthened with a renewed commitment to my attitude and behavior. If the response is negative, I rethink the issue and attempt to change my attitude or my behavior or really whatever it is that needs to be made right. I absolutely love these relationships. I can honestly say that I am a much stronger and better Christian today because of my accountability with these people. Now, don't get me wrong. What they've had to say hasn't always been easy to swallow, but I have swallowed it. And the reason I have swallowed it is because I know they love me dearly and really have my best interest in mind. Please note this next point, especially if you are a pastor. I want you to put a big exclamation point after this. There are always going to be those people who are overly zealous to have you and the rest of the world accountable to them. Their accountability is nothing more than unfounded criticism and a desire to make you just like them. See, not everyone has the right to be your mentor. Many think they do, but they do not. With the high and most often unrealistic expectations placed on ministers today, the last thing you need is one more person holding you accountable with criticism and condemnation. I've seen it hundreds of times. Churches scratch their heads, saying, they just don't make pastors like they used to. When in reality, they should be saying, they sure don't make churches like they used to. My point is this. If you're in a relationship which criticizes instead of encourages, which drains you instead of strengthens you, where you are asked to conform to another's picky minutia instead of character development, then you have the wrong mentors. This happens to pastors all the time by people who have not gained the right to do this because they do not have your best interest in mind. The only interest they have is their own. When I found myself in this type of scenario, I was exhausted from not measuring up. But when I found people who truly loved and cared for me, and really had nothing but my best interest in mind, their words brought me life. They brought me encouragement and strength. And they brought change in my life. Why? Because my mentors were safe people whom I trusted. So when we're talking about accountability, we're talking about accountability with those who have earned the right to be your mentor. People who are safe and trusted individuals. People who have your best interest at heart. My accountability friends find great joy and satisfaction in seeing me succeed. Now, I am not saying that mentors in an accountable relationship are to only bring positive things to you. They may most definitely bring about some remarks that may not set well with you, but they will always do it in a way that brings life. In a way that brings encouragement, in a way that brings a motivation and an inspiration to change. So be sure to choose the right accountability relationships so your expectations aren't dashed and the life is not sucked out of you. Listen to these very fine proverbs. Proverbs 13:10. With those who receive counsel is wisdom. 13 verse 14. The teaching of the wise is a fountain of life, to turn aside from the snares of death. 13 verse 20. He who walks with wise men will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. Chapter 15, verse 31. He whose ear listens to the life-giving reproof will dwell among the wise. Chapter 20, verse 5. A plan in the heart of a man is like deep water, but a man of understanding draws it out. Chapter 24, verse 26. He kisses the lips who gives a right answer. Chapter 27, verse 17. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Listen to Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 10. Two are better than one, because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. Isn't it interesting that according to Proverbs chapter 15, verse 31, a reproof can be life-giving? I've experienced this, but it is only life-giving when given by safe, trusted, godly individuals with whom you can be accountable to. In Plato's Dialogues, Apology section 38, Socrates says that an unexamined life is not worth living. Examine your life and find individuals who will help you do this in love. Don't allow just anyone to climb into your lap, get nose to nose, and rebuke you for not measuring up to his or her own personal agenda or preference. And don't you do that to anyone either. Find someone who loves you to death and who has earned the right to hold you accountable. Shortly after moving into the parsonage of a new pastorate, an attorney stopped over, pulled me aside, and said, "I was listening to Chuck Swindoll today, and he said we all need someone with whom we can be accountable to. I don't have anybody in my life with whom I am accountable to. Would you be willing to establish that kind of relationship with me?" Wow. I said, "Thank you, Chuck. I wish we had more people in our churches like this attorney." We began a relationship that would influence and impact my life in ways for which I am forever grateful to God. We held each other accountable, and we could talk about anything because, you see, it was a safe environment, and we trusted each other. Never once was that trust violated. We not only held each other accountable for the big things in our spiritual life, such as prayer, Bible study, godly living, and those type of things, but we also held each other accountable for the little things as well. He pulled me aside one day and told me I had been saying wives instead of wives in my messages. I made certain in the remaining messages to carefully enunciate for the benefit of the hearer. I corrected my grammar, and now I watch that area of my speaking very closely. On one occasion, I spoke with him about his children's behavior during the church service. Do you realize what a touchy subject that is for most parents? And you know what? He agreed with me. And I gained a greater understanding of his situation. And really, from that point on, there were no more problems. See, accountability is a great thing within the confines of a trusting, loving environment. Ted Engstrom, in his book, The Fine Art of Mentoring, believes that every Christian mentor needs a Barnabas to receive encouragement, a Timothy to guide as a protege, and an Epaphroditus to enjoy on a peer level. Think about it for a moment. Is there a Barnabas in your life? Barnabas represents someone who gives encouragement. Barnabas saw potential in people. He saw the potential in Paul when others desired to keep their distance. Other Christians were skeptical of his conversion, sensing this might be some warped plan to infiltrate and kill even more Christians. But Acts chapter 9, verse 27, informs us that Barnabas took hold of him and brought him to the apostles to share his testimony. Barnabas saw the potential in Paul and encouraged him, even bringing him to the apostles. Can't you just hear Barnabas saying, "Paul, God has laid his hand upon you, and he's called you for a special purpose. This is no accident, and this is no coincidence. Let's go to the apostles and have you share your testimony with them. And they will see how you now believe in Jesus. Paul, God is going to use you in a mighty way. Boy, you know, couldn't you go for someone like that on your side, prodding you along with encouragement? When the gospel spread to Antioch and many turned to the Lord, the apostles sent Barnabas to verify the situation as genuine. Upon seeing the Spirit of God at work, Barnabas travels to Tarsus to find Paul and bring him to Antioch to help. Paul was a powerful teacher and understood the Greek mind and culture, and he was really perfect for the situation. Barnabas, the encourager, took an interest in Paul, encouraged him, and prodded him along to a fruitful ministry for the Lord. Do you have a Barnabas in your life? If not, I encourage you to find one. Is there a Paul in your congregation or in your life just waiting for a Barnabas to come along? See, maybe you need to be a Barnabas for someone. Do you have a Timothy to guide as a protege? All one has to do is look at Paul's epistles to Timothy to see his words of guidance for the young man. As we've already seen, Paul took Timothy under his wings, taught him, guided him, modeled successful ministry for him, and entrusted him with experiences that would form and mold him. Is there a Timothy in your life with whom you're investing your time, your experiences, your wisdom, and your knowledge? I just believe that there are many Timothys out there waiting for a Paul to take them under their wings. When we remember that mentoring is how Jesus taught his own disciples, it seems to be a worthwhile endeavor and investment of time. Who has been the Paul in your life? Take what you've learned and invest it in a Timothy. Is there an Epaphroditus in your life? That is, someone to enjoy on a peer level. In Philippians chapter 2, Paul calls Epaphroditus my brother and fellow worker and fellow soldier. They both had a deep compassion for those they served. In verse 26, Paul recognizes how much Epaphroditus was longing for the Philippians. They were colleagues and they were peers with like-minded compassion. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 18, Epaphroditus brings Paul ample supplies as sent from the Philippians, peers sharing with each other. Some have equated Epaphras, an eminent teacher in the Colossian church, with Epaphroditus, believing his name to be a contraction or shortened version of Epaphroditus. If this is true, we gather even more insight into Epaphroditus. If Epaphras is a totally different individual, then we find another peer and colleague with whom Paul shared with. Colossians chapter 1, verse 7 says, "You learned it from Epaphras, our beloved fellow bondservant, who is a faithful servant of Christ on our behalf. And he also informed us of your love in the Spirit." Paul's colleague was sharing what God was doing among the Colossians. In chapter 4, verse 12, we read, Epaphras, who is one of your number, a bondslave of Jesus Christ, sends you his greetings, always laboring earnestly for you in his prayers, that you may stand perfect and fully assured in all the will of God. Here, Paul is sharing for Epaphras, sending his greetings along in the letter. Epaphroditus was a peer and colleague whom Paul trusted, and whom he held in high esteem and felt comfortable sharing with. Is there an Epaphroditus in your life? A trusted colleague with whom you can share with and enjoy on a peer level? Professional jealousies often inhibit these types of relationships from forming. The minister of a small rural church could feel that a large metropolitan church pastor doesn't care or doesn't understand his situation. The pastor of a large metropolitan multiple staff church may feel he can't get close to anyone because he is supposed to have all the answers, since he is obviously viewed as successful. My own experience has shown professional jealousies over my level of education, unfounded jealousies, stereotypes, and prejudices can become a barrier to enjoying one another's company.